The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church in Ackerman, Mississippi. We invite you to visit Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church for worship services every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Macedonia is located at 11 Staten Road on Highway 15, 5 miles north of Ackerman, Mississippi. For more information about Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church, you may visit our website at macedonia-pbc.org.
Let's go to Hebrews chapter 11. We want to continue looking at the honor roll of faith here in Hebrews chapter 11. And this has been a pretty good little Old Testament survey for us, right? We've looked at quite a few very prominent Old Testament characters: Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, and now we've made our way, verses 30 and 31 this evening, we'd like to consider to look at the faith of Joshua and the faith of Rahab. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 30 and 31. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were compassed about 7 days. By faith, the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not when she had received the spies with peace. So, before we look at the faith of Joshua and Rahab, the last event that is described here in Hebrews chapter 11 is the crossing of the Red Sea, and that great moment of faith in the life of Abraham, and how bold he was that we tried to consider that he said, "Fear not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord," and he's made that bold statement of faith before he even knew how the Lord was going to deliver them by miraculously parting the Red Sea. And that's such a high watermark in Old Testament history in the life of Moses and in the nation of Israel. But before we arrive at the next benchmark of faith there in Hebrews chapter 11, unfortunately, we see a very unfortunate lack of faith by the nation of Israel, because the Lord took them the long way, a long route to the precipice of the land of Canaan. It would have been a very short trip, only I believe an 11-day trip through the land of the Philistines. But instead, if you trace the timeline, they show up right, I believe it was Kadesh Barnea, that they were right on the edge of that, probably at the beginning of the second year, probably the first month or two of the second year. So instead of an 11-day trip, they take a full year's worth trip to arrive at the border of the land of Canaan. And unfortunately, we know that they exhibited not a bold faith that was rooted in what they cannot see. Instead, they allowed what they could see to quench their faith, and they didn't enter into the land. And only Caleb and Joshua were bold in faith, trusting that the promise of the Lord that he would give them the land would be profitable. And we know that 40 years, that entire generation died out in the wilderness because of what? Because of a lack of faith. Okay? Let's look at that. Numbers chapter 13. You can be turning over to Numbers chapter 13. But this is also alluded to in Hebrews chapter 4 and described to in regards to entering into rest, in the promised land. And it specifically says the reason why God's people did not enter into rest was because of unbelief. And unbelief is a lack of faith, right? Unbelief is a lack of faith and confidence in the Lord. And faith is believing in what we cannot see, trusting the Lord even though we cannot see it. And I believe this is a very important lesson, to not allow what we see with our natural eyes to overrule the faith in the Lord that we cannot see with our natural eyes. Because the reason why they didn't enter in was because they put too much stock in what they saw with their natural eyes. Okay? In Numbers chapter 13, 12 spies were sent out into the land of Canaan. And that's good practice, right? I mean, that's good. If you're going into a land that you've never seen before, I don't think it's a lack of faith to send out people to examine the land and make the best decision. What's the best entry point? What route do we need to take? And they send out 12, each representative of one tribe, and they go and they examine the land, and they come back in Numbers chapter 13. After 40 days of searching the land, they come back in verse 27 and give this report. And they told him and said, "We came into a land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it." Remember, they brought back, verse 23, they cut down from thence a branch of one cluster of grapes, and they bare it between two upon a staff, and they brought of pomegranates and figs. The fruit was so big there they had to have two men carrying the fruit. And it's a land that flows with milk and honey. No wonder the Lord promised us this. It's a great land, very prosperous, very fruitful, that will certainly care for probably millions of Israelites at this time. But there's something that overruled the good that they saw in that land. You know, there's always a but, right? In this passage here in Scripture, it's not a but, it's a nevertheless. You know, yes, the land's great. Yes, the Lord's promised it to us. Yes, it's a land that flows with milk and honey. Look how big the fruit of this land is. But verse 28, nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. Moreover, we saw the children of Anak there, the Amalekites, they dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites, they dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea. But Caleb, he saw where this was going. He saw the negative lack of faith that's being exhibited by these other ten. But then Caleb, and Joshua is right there along with him, Caleb stilled the people, and he stands up in faith and says, "Look, let us go at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." But the men went up with him, said, "We be not able to go up against those people, for they are stronger than we." Okay? And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched for the children of Israel, saying, "The land which we have gone to search it, it's a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in are men of great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which came of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight." We're just grasshoppers in their sight. You don't understand how big these people were. You don't understand how tall they were. Everyone out there was a giant, and their walls, the walls of their city are tall and they're strong. We cannot overcome these really big tall guys and these really big tall walls. We have no ability to overcome that. Now, they weren't incorrect in that assessment. And you're right. No, you don't have the ability to do it. But what was Caleb's response in faith? "Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." Why did he believe that they could overcome it? Not because, this is what we're going to see in the siege of the city of Jericho. It's not because we are a well-trained military. No, these are just a bunch of slaves that got out of bondage. This is not a well-trained military. They don't have fancy weapons that are going to be better than the weapons that the people of the land of Canaan have. They're smaller, apparently. They're physically smaller. They don't have some C4 to put on that wall to blow up that wall. I mean, walls were a really big deal back in that day, right? About the only way to do it, you know, that they didn't have cannons, right? About the only way to get in is to just try to sneak in or to bust down the gate of the city. And there's a reason why high walls were so important back during these days. But Caleb is not saying, look, I have a well-crafted military strategy. We've been training for years for this. We've been in bondage for 400 years, but the whole time we've been training because we know we're going to have to take this land. The whole reason that he said that is not based on him placing confidence in the people at all. He's saying, look, the Lord had promised us this land. The Lord's going to fight for us. We're able to overcome it because he had faith in the Lord. You see, he believed in God's promise, and he believed in what he couldn't see, but those other 10 people, they allowed, even if they had faith, they allowed what they saw with their natural eyes to override confidence and faith and trust in Almighty God. And I'll tell you, that is a very common problem that all of us have, because faith many times will call us to act in a way that is contrary to what is logical in our natural sense, and it might even cause us to deny what we're seeing with our natural eyes. You know, I can't remember where it's at in the Kings, but Elisha was with his servant, and the servant gets up in the morning, and he sees that they are totally surrounded with this, I believe it was the Syrian army. What are we going to do? I got to wake Elisha up real quick. What in the world are we getting? Look at all these people that are, all this army that's surrounding us. All I can see with my natural eyes is a physical army. And I love how Elisha is just so calm and collected in that account. And he essentially says, no, calm down. And oh, by the way, Lord, open his eyes so he can see the reality of the situation. And yes, there may have been a army that was surrounding them, but then when the Lord opened his eyes to see the reality of the situation, there were chariots of fire manned by angels that the Lord had sent to protect his people. You see, he was afraid because he was only looking at what he saw with his natural eye, but there was a reality of the situation that there were angels that were there to fight for them. You see, we get in trouble when we only gauge this world around us with our natural eyes and our natural 5 senses, especially when those 5 natural senses contradict faith in the promise of the Lord. Okay? Now, this continues further. Numbers chapter 14. All the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. Do you think that faith is important in your daily life, in your daily disposition? You know, we've been trying to consider Hebrews chapter 11 because faith is how we are to live. The just shall live by faith. If we're going to live a life that's pleasing to God, without faith it's impossible to please God. But faith is not you making a decision to place your faith in Jesus Christ so you can go to heaven. Faith is a fruit of the Spirit, and we have to enact that faith. But whether you live by faith or not has a lot to do with the way that you handle situations and the way that you get to enjoy life here in the kingdom of God. Do you understand that I believe it was not necessary? If those 12 people had all showed up and said the exact same thing that Caleb did, look, let us go in right now. Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. If all 12 of them would have said that and they would have pressed in the land of Canaan, none of them would have had to die in the wilderness. I believe that. Why did that happen? Because of a lack of faith. They physically died in the wilderness, and the Lord provided for them, and he gave them manna, and he gave them, you know, quail, meat to eat. He provided for their basic necessities, but they could have been had an extra 40 years in a land that flowed with milk and honey. Okay? But notice just their physical, emotional disposition because of their lack of faith. I mean, they are on this high, right? I mean, they're getting excited. They hear the first half of it, right? Man, this land is a land that flows with milk and honey. Look how prosperous all this fruit is. And they're getting excited, but then these 10 spies give an evil report, and they're only looking by natural. And now look what happens with everyone else because of, by the way, I think this is also a lesson that's very important. Your lack of faith, your lack of trust and confidence in the Lord can really affect other people's faith as well. 10 men gave a evil, false report. Millions of Israelites believe them, and millions of Israelites die in the wilderness because of the lack of faith of 10 people. Okay. Now, notice the response of pretty much everyone except for Moses, Caleb, and Joshua. The congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. They spent all night crying. Whereas, if they just would have believed the promise of God, nothing changed. Do you understand that nothing changed in regards to God's disposition and willingness to drive out the people of the only thing that changed was their lack of faith. And instead of them being excited, we're going to go take this land. We're going to go get to enjoy this land that flows with milk. Instead of them being excited about it, they're spending all night crying. And not only are they spending all night crying, they're saying, oh, it'd be way better if we went back to Egypt. Verse 2, all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, would God we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in this wilderness. And they just continue on. Verse 4, let us make a captain, and let us return unto Egypt. I mean, they're not just saying hypothetically, you know, oh man, you know, those really good onions and leeks and garlics, and oh man, I remember how good we had it. No. Let's make a captain, and let's go back. Let's go back into bondage. And Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before the assembly of the congregation. Of course they were, right? Could you be any more frustrated, right? We're on the precipice. God's about to give us the land, and now you're literally saying, let's make some leaders, and let's go back into bondage. Let's go back into Egypt. But Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb that were with them, they searched the land, they rent their clothes, and they spake unto the children of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through, search it, it's an exceeding good land. Notice their faith in the Lord. If the Lord delight in us, he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. Only rebel not against the Lord, neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them. You think those... And that's what we're going to see in the siege of the city of Jericho. You think those walls are so impressive? No, their defenses are already gone. Their defenses are departed from them. They have no protection against us. Why? Because God's on our side, right? Their defense is departed from them. Why? And the Lord is with us. Fear them not. You see, everyone is being infected by this cancer of unbelief. Look how fast it's spreading, right? The lack of faith. And now everyone, except for pretty much four people, is saying, we need to go back to Egypt. And what's the response of the mob mentality when you have a small remnant that are trying to be level-headed and do the right thing? Verse 10. But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. I tell you, people are so irrational. The mob mentality, and if anyone disagrees with the mob, then we will force you into subjection. We will force you into silence. These people were in the right. They're trying to do the right thing. They are walking by faith, and what is the response of the people of God for the small remnant that are doing the right thing, trusting God, and trying to walk by faith? What's their response? To literally kill them. To silence them. right? To stone them. Isn't that horrible? Isn't that sad? I hate to say that that's where we're getting to here in this country. You have this mob mentality. Anyone that disagrees with the mob, we're taking up stones to stone you. We're going to silence you. Either we're going to censor you or we're just going to physically hurt you. And what's so sad is this is not a depiction of the wicked in the world. This is a depiction of God's chosen people in the Old Testament. You see, we're not immune from that type of mindset and activity, okay? Do you see how the lack of faith of 10 people has now infected millions of Israelites, and they've rejected the promise of God, and now the only voice of reason, they think the best option is to kill them, to stone them, to silence anyone that disagrees with us. So we see this just profound lack of faith that started out with 10 people and just immediately invaded all of Israel. But don't miss the basis and the reason why that happened. It's because they allowed what they saw with their natural eyes to override the promise of God to give them land. Okay? And if you think that living by faith or not living by faith does not have consequences in our lives, the result of this, the result of them believing that evil report, is that a whole generation, everyone 20 years of age and up, a whole generation physically died in the wilderness and did not enter into the land of Canaan. Even Moses, not because of this, because he disobeyed the Lord due to a lack of faith, as he smote the rock instead of speaking to the rock like he was supposed to, because of a lack of faith, he didn't enter into the land either. I tell you, unbelief and a lack of faith has very serious consequences in our physical lives when we don't trust the promise of God. Now, fast forward. Joshua is one of these bold, really only two. We see Moses and Aaron and Caleb and Joshua are really the only four people that are depicted here as having confidence and trust in the Lord to give them the land. Now, it addresses the fall and the siege of the city of Jericho first, but that is not addressed until Joshua chapter 6. So we will consider Rahab before we consider that, because we find that in Joshua chapter 2. So turn to Joshua chapter 2 with me. And they are preparing to re-enter the land of Canaan. Okay? The entire generation has passed away in the wilderness, and the only people that's left, literally, the only people that's left from that generation is Joshua and Caleb. Moses has passed away, and now Joshua is the leader of the people, the leader of the nation of Israel. So he sends out two spies to go and examine, map out, spy out the city of Jericho. And those two spies arrive in the home of Rahab, who we know as Rahab the harlot. Now, it appears that there's a possibility that Rahab could have repented of her former activities, her former life, because we have references in verse 6 that she brings them up to the roof of her house, and she's hiding them under stalks of flax that she'd laid in order upon the roof. Possibly she was getting into that type of a business, but that's not really relevant for our discussion. But regardless of if she was actively engaging in that sin or if she was trying to move away from that, it's really amazing the type of faith that she exhibits when these spies come in, because you understand, she's going to say they've been hearing about everything that had been happening leading up to this. You know, there's a 40-year gap, but we heard 40 years ago there were all of these strange, crazy plagues that happened in the nation of Egypt. And the firstborn died, and there was locusts, and there was frogs, and there was darkness, and all this stuff. That stuff like that spreads pretty quick, right? That's the rumor mill that everyone knew about that, right? So they knew what God had did for them in the nation of Egypt. And then there were two kings on the other side of Jordan that they had ransacked and they'd killed. And then, but before they make their way, this is in chapter 3, before they actually go into Jericho, there's a miraculous crossing of the Jordan River that they heard about as well. But I want you to understand, I'm sure that the narrative in Jericho was not that, oh, there's this people that are passing through that came from Egypt and they've wiped out these kings. No, they knew they were the very first city when they went into Canaan. They knew they were gunning for them, okay? So I want you to look at that from the perspective of Rahab, not just saying, oh, please come into my house, enemy spies who are coming to map out the city. Oh, please let me give you a very nice warm meal and some coffee. These people were coming for the stated purpose of overthrowing the city, and she may have not known about this. Well, she probably had a good indication that just about everybody was going to be killed in the city because she specifically asked, hey, please don't kill me and my family, okay? So she probably had a good idea that, you know, these people were not coming to just place a flag in the ground and then move on to the next city, okay? So if she is a rugged Jericho nationalist, it doesn't make a lot of sense for her to be very receptive to these people, does she? No. Her home's about to be destroyed. Her family and friends are about to be killed. But what is her response? She receives them. It says she received them with peace, is the language that it uses in Hebrews chapter 11. If there's anyone that you're going to be antagonistic toward, you would think it would be the enemy spies that are coming to spy out the city, right? But she received them with peace. But notice these phrases that she uses as she is conversing with these spies after she receives them into her home in peace. Verse 9 of Joshua chapter 2. I know that the Lord hath given you the land, and that your terror is fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land faint because of you. And I want you to notice in your King James Bible, that word Lord is in all caps, which means that is the covenant name Jehovah. And I want you to understand the significance of this. This is a Gentile woman who lived in a very ungodly way in Jericho. And she is taking the covenant name of Jehovah, and she is displaying faith in Jehovah. Okay? And there's a couple important points about that. The first of them being, it is evident that she had faith before these spies arrived. That shows the sovereignty of God in the new birth and in regeneration. That God has a people out of every nation, kindred, people, and tongue. You know, just like when Paul was preaching, I believe it was in Corinth in Acts chapter 18, and the Lord said, don't be afraid, fear not to preach in the city, because I already have much people in this city. Well, why did the Lord already have much people in that city? Well, if regeneration is conditional, you have to perform an action. In the Old Testament, how were people born again apart from the natural nation of Israel and the law and the lineage of Abraham? How are they born again? If there is some type of knowledge or action that you have to perform to be born again. Well, you don't know how they were born again? The exact same way as every other child of God, right? Not based on some action that you perform, not based on some condition that you meet, but based on the sovereignty of God and regeneration, just like the blowing of the wind, right? Imagine that. God's people show up in a city, and God already has people in that city too. And oh, by the providence of God, where did those spies make their way to? To some wicked heathen general who would kill them on the spot? No. Oh, by the providence of God, they make their way to the home of a regenerated harlot. And she receives them with peace. You see, God has a people out of every nation, kindred, people, and tongue. And isn't it surprising that there are people that are living by faith even when they arrive in this heathen, pagan, godless culture? I'll tell you, go read. We're not going to divert over there. But go read all of the sins in Leviticus and Deuteronomy and Exodus and some even in Numbers too. Especially the sin, the sexual sins of immorality. The Lord said, the reason why you go into these cities and I'm telling you to wipe out, kill every person in these cities is because they are engaging in the things that I'm commanding you to not engage in. And if you spend time with them, they're going to corrupt you. What I'm saying is, these were not good, godly cities. They were filled with immoral, ungodly, licentious behavior. And there's a reason why the Lord said, don't leave any of them. Because if you do, they're going to corrupt you. Okay? That's the environment that she was living in. This is Sodom and Gomorrah type of culture. Okay? Sodom and Gomorrah type of culture. But guess what? God has a regenerated sister that's living by faith when they arrive there. Right? But notice what she says. She's not saying, please spare us. Please take it easy on us. No, I know that the Lord has given you the city. How did she know that? Now, she saw and she heard the same rumors that everybody else heard, right? She'd heard what happened in Egypt. She'd heard what happened to those two kings of the Amorites. That's the end of verse 10. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what ye did under the two kings of the Amorites, which were on the other side of Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom ye utterly destroyed. You see, the people of everyone in the city of Jericho had the same informational knowledge. But what was her response to that? Her response was not to be terrified. Her response was to say, I believe in the God of these Israelites. I believe that this God, verse 11, he is God in heaven above and in the earth beneath. As soon as we had heard these things, our hearts did melt. Neither did there remain any more courage in any man because of you. You know what's sad? I bet the only thing that is really different about this, actually, I have to go back and look at the timeline of when they actually conquered these two kings of the Amorites. But I bet the people of Jericho, the people of Canaan, were just as terrified of the Israelites 40 years ago when they heard about these things. Right? I bet they were just as terrified as they are right now. And isn't it sad that the people of Canaan were terrified of them, but the lack of faith of Israel says, oh, we're so afraid of you, we can't take you. They were terrified because they knew what was coming. And even, of course, this lady, this sister, she's walking by faith and trusting the Lord, but everyone in that city knew there was a judgment coming. There are people coming down the pipeline. And they were afraid. They were afraid. As soon as we had heard these things, our hearts did melt. We didn't have any courage because of you. And notice, she says, for the Lord your God is God in heaven above and in earth beneath. Now, did these spies show up into this home of a harlot and say, let me tell you about Jehovah God. Let me tell you about the Ten Commandments. Let me tell you about there is one God, and Him only shalt thou worship. Right? Did they go into her house and pull out a Bible tract and say, let me tell you about my God so you can get to know Him? You make a decision. No, guess what? She already knew Him. And she already had some knowledge about Him. And you know what? She believed He was sovereign. Right? He has all power in heaven and in earth. And you want to know how she knew that? It wasn't because the Israelites showed up at her door and gave her some information and said, you need to make a decision. The Lord revealed that to her personally without any help from any Israelites, and in our current time, not any help from any preacher or anybody else. The Lord revealed it to her personally, right? And then she requires them to make a covenant in the name of Jehovah. Verse 12, now therefore I pray you, swear unto me by the Lord, since I have showed you kindness, that ye will also show kindness unto my father's house and give me a true token. So she affirms the Lord as the means by which a covenant is held accountable and verified as well. Okay? See, she exhibits faith in a Jehovah God that the only thing she'd really ever heard about were all these rumors that came into the land of Canaan. Now, we see faith in these two spies as opposed to the lack of faith in 10 out of the 12 spies previously. The men said, our life is yours, verse 14, if you utter not this business, and it shall be when the Lord hath given us the land, that we will deal kindly and truly with you. So, they had confidence that the Lord was going to give them the land, right? They're not waffling, you know. What they're not doing is going and spying everything out so they can make, craft the best military strategy for how we need to infiltrate them. Nope. Thankfully, they're walking by faith this time. And the spies are walking by faith. And God providentially guides them to the home of a harlot who's also walking by faith, right? Now, very quickly in Joshua chapter 3, we have a miraculous crossing of the Jordan River. But I want you to notice the leadership of Joshua and the faith that he displays and how that encourages the rest of the people to have faith. Okay? Now, look at that in contrast to what happened 40 years before. You had 10 people who displayed a lack of faith, and it corrupted the entire nation. But you have Joshua's bold leadership in walking by faith, and he's going to tell them to do something that is going to sound very odd, very weird, very illogical in just a little bit. But because of Joshua's bold faith, they followed him in faith. Okay? Joshua chapter 3, verse 10. Hereby ye shall know that the living God is among you, that he will drive, or that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Jebusites. And then, behold, the ark of the covenant of the Lord of all the earth passeth before you. Then he gives some specifics about what they were supposed to do in the actual crossing. But I want you to notice where Joshua's confidence was. It was not in, you know what, I've been mapping out the best military strategy in the world for the last 40 years. I've been thinking about this for 40 years, and this is what we're going to do. No, he says, the Lord is going to give us this land. Right? And then, he tells them, this is in Joshua chapter 6, he tells them to take the Ark of the Covenant, to have priests with trumpets, and for 6 days, you walk around the city one time, and you stop. And don't say anything. Can't say anything to anybody. Walk around the city one time, and then that's it for that day. Walk around the city one time on day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5, day 6, and that's it. And then on the 7th day, we're going to walk around the city 7 times. The priests are going to blow the trumpet. You're going to shout because the Lord has given you the city. Now, Joshua displays throughout the rest of this book that he was a very impressive military mind, very impressive military general. But do you think this made any sense to these people that have been walking around in the wilderness for 40 years? We have been waiting on this moment for this long, and this is the plan. To what is that going to have to do with those really tall walls over there in the city of Jericho? Don't you know this didn't make, to a large degree, in a natural sense, it didn't make a lick of sense to anybody. Why in the world are we walking around, not saying anything, and what good are these trumpets going to do? What good is this hollering going to do on day 7? What good is any of this going to do? But you don't know what they did? They didn't weep. They didn't say we're going back to Egypt. They didn't try to stone Joshua. You don't know what they did? They did what they told him to do. What he told him to do, right? They followed his example of faith in leading them. And that's exactly what happened, right? They walk around 6 days. And don't you know that was really, you know, the people of Jericho, they didn't know, they're already afraid, right? Rahab said they're already terrified. And don't you know that was intimidating? Walking around for 6 days, nobody saying anything. Oh, what are they doing? Oh, wait, they stopped. And they do the same thing on day 2. Same thing on day 3. Same thing on day 4. Same thing on day... Don't you know that was very intimidating? Because, you know, the more time that you have to think about things, the more you spiral out in your head what could possibly be happening. They had 6 days to see them walk around them one time, stop, and they're not saying anything the whole time. I bet the people of Jericho were absolutely terrified. That so much more so afraid than they would have been if they were seeing them in battle formations. And then on day 7, they circled the city 7 times. Priests blow the trumpet. He says, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. And guess what? All those walls that were impenetrable fell down flat. How about that? How about that? What's so sad is if there wasn't a lack of faith for the prior generation, I believe the Lord would have given them as mighty of a victory 40 years before as well. Okay? But there are people that died in the wilderness for a lack of faith. Now, fast forward to the next city. They go and they have some people look at the city of Ai, and they said, you know what? We really took care of business at Jericho very efficiently. And you know what? Ai, it's a little bitty city. We don't even need everybody. Let's just take a little bit, a handful of folks, and let's go knock out Ai real quick, and then we'll move on to the next city. And guess what? They got whipped. Why? Because immediately, the very next city, instead of walking by faith and saying, you know what, this is what the Lord told us to do, and it really didn't make a lot of military sense, but we're going to do it anyway. And guess what? The Lord had those walls fall down flat. But then they said, you know what, this is a little bitty city. We'll just take a couple regiments over here. We just need a couple folks. We'll go whip them real quick, and then we'll move on to the next city. And then those little Ai folks, they whipped the Israelites, right? Now, there was also the sin of Achan, who took the accursed thing as well, and that was part of the reason why the Lord did not, you know, honor that siege, because there was sin in the camp. But I want you to notice the distinction between walking by faith and walking by sight. You know, we're told that in the New Testament, right? We walk by faith and not by sight. That's what happens when you put too much emphasis on your natural sight. You say, oh my goodness, look how tall those men are. Look, they're giants. We're grasshoppers, and look how tall their walls are. We can't conquer them. To which the answer is correct. No, you can't conquer them. But the God, just like Rahab said, who has all power in heaven and on earth, if that God is on your side, yeah, you can, they're grasshoppers in your sight. If God's on your side, right? Those walls, yeah, they may look pretty tall, but they're going to be really flat to the ground when you do what the Lord tells you to do, right? When you walk by faith. But instead, these are some of the perils when you walk by sight instead of walking by faith. And you have this great mountaintop moment in the book of in the city of Jericho, right? And obviously now they've ironed all the kinks out. Obviously now they're going to do everything just the way they ought to. And then the very next city, what are they back to? Walking by sight.
On
walking by sight. Choosing out a well-crafted military strategy instead of saying, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? The faith of Rahab, who trusted in the Lord, even though those enemies that were coming to destroy her city, her homeland, were right at the brink. She received them in peace by faith, and then the faith of Joshua, and then by his faithful leadership, all the rest of Israel followed him, which is a whole lot different story than what happened 40 years before. So, as it is with all of these examples in Hebrews chapter 11, we need to evaluate them and use them as encouragements for us to live by faith and walk by faith in the manner that we ought to.
We thank you for listening to today's message and invite you to visit Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church for worship services every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Macedonia is located at 11 Staten Road on Highway 15, 5 miles north of Ackerman, Mississippi. For further information about Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church, you may visit our website at macedonia-pbc.org.